In 2004, President Bush laid out a vision for America's future in space. That included returning humans to the moon and eventually setting up human outposts on Mars and possibly beyond. To map out how that vision might be put into effect, President Bush appointed 9 commissioners to hold public hearings to gather expert opinions on the way forward. On the final day, the commission held a press conference. This evening, we bring you that conference, which was moderated by the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission's Public Affairs Officer, Susan Flowers.
Could you give your name and affiliation first, please?
Yes, hello, I'm Tarek Malik from space.com, and I just had a question for the commission, or even individual commissioners, about the role of international cooperation. We've seen today and also yesterday that it will factor in, and that there are countries that are interested in working in it. I'm particularly interested in the role of Russia for post-ISS operations. Have you received any notice from Russian space officials who were interested to work with the United States, with NASA, for this vision, or you know, are you open to basically working with them as well?
Commission Chairman Pete Aldridge fielded this first question. Pete is a 42-year veteran of aerospace leadership.
The Commission has not received any direct correspondence with Russia on the topic. Clearly, they've been working with NASA as part of the space station and certainly the resupply process, and then working with NASA on what's going to happen post-shuttle and prior to having an alternate vehicle for space station support. But we personally have not. The individuals that we have talked to, you heard yesterday and today, and I guess we had a couple of others earlier in time, all have shown an interest in participating. The question is, they don't know exactly how and what contributions they can make until they get a better definition of what the architecture looks like to carry out this vision of space exploration. So it's a little premature for them to be very definitive, other than showing an interest, and you heard that interest today and yesterday. I'm sure that NASA, once the architecture is done, there will be a lot more conversation as to exactly how. I believe you'll hear from us that we believe that this is an important aspect of the space exploration vision, and it should be pursued with as much vigor as possible.
Yes, now.
Stephen Cass, IEEE Spectrum Magazine. One thing I've heard from Congress is that there are concerns that extend even beyond whether or not there will be additional funding, that in fact there are concerns that NASA has exceeded, even with the presidential directive. We're hearing about this transformation of NASA, and that in performing this transformation of NASA, NASA hasn't got the authority to do so without specific congressional authorization. Is the Commission looking specifically at the legal framework, how much freedom NASA has, going back to the 1958 Space Act, and seeing really just how much legal room to maneuver NASA has?
Well, I think
Pete Aldridge also answered this question.
The implications and implementation of the vision we are looking at, what are the various means to make sure that the vision, as has been stated by the President, can be implemented successfully. We have not looked into the details of any budgetary implications. The question we had to Sean O'Keefe was what implications there are for the various budgets and what can and can't be done. As you heard, the carrying out this commission can't be done without congressional authorization, which somewhat surprised us. But I'm sure that those kinds of issues would be worked out. And for the FY 2005 budget, that certainly will require congressional authorization and appropriations and to carry that out. But I don't think there are any legal impediments to carrying out this vision other than that which must be process through the normal budget activity. And Bob, you're intimately familiar with this.
Yeah.
And this question was picked up by Bob Walker, who spent 20 years in the American Congress. Much of that time was spent on committees that had oversight of NASA's budget.
I mean, I think NASA has a good deal of latitude for reorganizing itself, and there may be some specifics that have been built into appropriation bills or built into authorization bills in the past that would have to be looked at, but the fact is that there's a good deal of latitude for NASA to do about its own organization what it wants to do.
All right, one more here locally.
Taylor Dinnerman, Space Review. Just a question on the whole question of export controls and international cooperation. In your recommendations, are you going to be looking at any changes to ITAR regulations or to export control regulations as they apply to international cooperation on this vision?
I think the answer is going to be no, because those regulations are pretty straightforward. The process just has to live within them. There were some innovative activities carried out on the Joint Strike Fighter, which might be appropriate. But in this particular case, in the space business, it's a little bit easier because we don't get into classified information, which in many of the weapon systems you do. But I don't anticipate that we'll address any kind of ITAR modifications, export control. We're just going to have to live within the provisions that currently exist. It'll be very presumptuous for us to go and say we ought to change something that's very complicated. And Bob, you
may remember that the Aerospace Commission report made extensive recommendations on that regard. That was a part of our charter. We did that. Those are being reviewed at the present time, and it's my understanding that the President does have an executive order that's being prepared that will speak to some ITAR reform. So there is some ongoing activity, but it's not kind of within our vision to be going back and rehashing a lot of that.
Marcia Dunn?
Yes, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
This is Marcia Dunn of the Associated Press.
Whoops. We could hear you.
We could have heard you.
Yeah, I'll wait a moment.
Okay. Let's take Steve Durst and see if we can get the feedback.
Steve Durst from Space Age Publishing Company in Hawaii.
And aloha.
Aloha. A question for the commissioners. Is the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter mission schedule of late 2008 changeable to an earlier date, perhaps closer to the earlier planned missions of Europe, Japan, China, and India? And I'd like to know what the reasons for such a late mission schedule are, given the much shorter 2.5 year time frame in which Clementine and Prospector were implemented.
The best person to pick up this question at the press conference was Paul Spudis. Commissioner Spudis is a planetary scientist at the Johns Hopkins University's Applied Physics Laboratory.
Hi, Steve. It's Paul Spudis.
Hi, Paul.
Effectively, according to NASA and the process that they put in place for LRO, they think they're doing this at an accelerated schedule. The fundamental problem is right now that is a proposed mission. It has no funding. So they are planning, they're moving forward to issuing an AO that should be out, my understanding is within a month, and proposals for instruments will be due sometime in the early fall. And they plan to do a new start when they get the funding at the beginning of the new fiscal year, from which point it will be 3 years to launch, which is the cycle of a typical Discovery class mission, which is the normal way of NASA doing business. I don't think there's any urgency, or they don't feel any urgency to accelerate that schedule. And in actual fact, if you look at the architecture of the vision and how it's put together, the schedule, that information is actually acquired in a reasonably timely manner as far as implementing the vision goes. There may be other considerations at some point where we would want to accelerate it for programmatic or political reasons, but that's sort of outside our scope of judgment.
Thank you.
Marcia?
Yeah, I'll try this again. Can you hear me?
Much better. Thank you very much for your patience.
Yes, Marcia Dunn of the Associated Press with a question for both Mr. Aldridge and Dr. Tyson, if you could both answer, please. Despite Mr. O'Keefe's insistence that this is a strategy and not a program and therefore cannot be priced out, many in Congress and the general public are looking for a comprehensive price tag, tentative though it may be. And I'm wondering if you think it's feasible in these tough economic times to sell the President's exploration initiative without providing a ballpark cost for the entire package. And I'm also wondering whether you'll be recommending that NASA come up with a figure.
Commissioner Chairman Pete Aldridge had no hesitation picking up this question.
Well, I think the way the strategy's been laid out, this is a pay-as-you-go strategy. It's going to cost us about $16 to $17 billion a year. And that will lead us into accomplishing and creating capabilities that can go back to the moon and on to Mars. How much it's actually going to cost is very, very difficult to predict because we don't know what technologies we're going to be applying 20 years from today. And so to try to nail down a cost which has such a tremendous amount of uncertainty to it is not in the interest of anybody. So the strategy is it's pay as you go. The cost will be $17 billion or roughly, depending on inflation, per year. And that's less than 1% of the federal budget. And we'll accomplish objectives and capabilities with those kinds of resources. That's the strategy. I believe that strategy is right. It's affordable. It's sustainable. And that's the way it needs to be explained to ensure that we know where we're going and we can accomplish the things we've laid out to accomplish.
Moon Mars Commissioner Neil Tyson is an astrophysicist who, like while director of the New York's Hayden Planetarium, has made some popular science television programs that have been shown on SBS television here in Melbourne. He obviously had the expertise to respond to this query.
Yeah, Neil Tyson here. I have very little to add to Pete's comment. I just want to call to people's attention that this $15, $16 billion a year budget proposed for NASA is less than Americans spend per year on cosmetics and makeup. And so just to put that in context for what the returns are, for some maybe it's an important return for their makeup, but just people need to spend more time considering what the cost of this vision is versus other things we take for granted in everyday life. Also, in 2004 dollars, the vision spends no more money than was spent in the 1990s when we didn't ever leave low Earth orbit. And so the issue here is not so much, well, what are we going to get for that amount of money this year versus next year? It's given that expenditure over the 10, 20, 30-year vision baseline, we look to see what kinds of things can happen for that amount of money. That's really what we're after here. And so in that sense, there is no, as the administrator said, we don't expect there to be some balloon payment or some activity that all of a sudden in 1 year says you have to top off the budget by another $7 billion. That's not going to happen. The actual layout and rollout of what we accomplish will be folded into that the available monies.
Marcia, Mike Jackson wants to comment too.
Marcia, I just wanted to add one thing just to make sure that we find the numbers. I think the chairman's exactly right that it's a pay-as-you-go program as the president proposes it, which is to say that there's a rough amount of money that the NASA budget would have for its purposes during the future years anticipated for the program. But another very important consideration, and to one extent or another, a way that we pick up the additional funds needed to run this program and to be able to move things faster or slower, is private sector investment, corporate investment to grow a space industry. That's why we keep harping on that, both domestically and internationally. Businesses, we believe, will invest in component parts of the program over this time and bring their money and their innovation to this project. So it's not accurate just simply to look at the NASA budget and think that's the only amount of money that you would see invested in this vision over this period of time.
The person answering this question is Mike Jackson. He was a former Deputy Secretary of the United States Department of Transportation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. Mark Carroll from the Houston Chronicle. Shall we go on to Oliver Robert from Montreal?
Yes. I would like to know the commissioner's vision on how will you propose to link the present space station international cooperation agreement Could it be a model for future international cooperation on the Moon-Mars initiative?
We heard Moon-Mars Commissioner Paul Spoutis earlier in this press conference. His specialty is the geology of the Moon, and he replied to this question.
The space station is one model that could be used. We discussed really two approaches to international cooperation. Certainly, there must be an umbrella agreement between governments that would provide the context by which international partners would participate in whatever efforts would be undertaken. One model would be where countries through agreement could bring their own independent missions to support an overall architecture, but they would be their own parts built by themselves, but to contribute to the overall mission objectives. The second one would be where a system integrator could be providing a capability and interfaces in which international partners could contribute components to a overall mission. And both of those types of models might be appropriate, but until we get an architecture developed by NASA, it's going to be very difficult to get into specifics as to what model might be the most appropriate. That will come with time, but it's certainly an objective we all feel would be important for the future mission.
All right, Jeff Hecht from The New Scientist, David Schrunk from San Diego.
Yes, could I make a comment, or is this for questions only?
This is a press conference. Hello. Hello, yes, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. What is going to happen to with your $16 to $17 billion a year, what's going to happen with the part of the budget that is now allocated for science programs such as the Webb Space Telescope, Discovery, Explorer missions, that kind of thing, and aeronautics and astronautics?
So I believe he's asking about the portion of the budget.
David, the plan, as I understand it, according to the charts that NASA have issued, is that those will grow at the rate of inflation. They will be funded at the current rate, increased by the rate of inflation. In fact, it's a little misleading to think of the full NASA budget as applied to exploration. The actual wedge, the exploration amounts, the money applied to specifically to exploration programs, is a subset of the complete NASA budget. There is still a robotic space science program. There is still an earth science program. There is still a technology program, and there's still an aeronautics program. And all of those are, if you look at the sand chart that's on the NASA website, show them to basically grow at the rate of inflation for the next 20 years.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
So what's left is there is only actually a portion of that $17 billion that will be for the exploration program.
That's correct.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Gwyneth? Now, we heard Moon-Mars Commissioner Spoutis earlier in this press conference. His specialty, as we said, is the geology of the Moon. And he replied to this next question.
Shaw?
Yeah, hi, this is Gwyneth Shaw from the Orlando Sentinel. And I guess this is for Mr. Aldridge and Dr. Tyson, although if anyone else wants to jump in, please do. I'm just curious if you can't put a ballpark figure on this long term. How can you sort of be so certain that it is affordable? And sort of an extension of that, if some of these building blocks don't happen or don't develop in the way that NASA hopes that they will, does the commission plan to recommend points where the whole thing could be reevaluated in terms of you reach a point where you're saying this isn't working?
Well, the strategy for laying this out is it's affordable because it's affordable within the federal budget on an annual basis. That's where you determine affordability. Looking at a long-term program and said, well, this program is $10 billion or $100 billion, you don't know whether it's affordable if all of that comes in 1 year. So the way it's been laid out, it is more acceptable and affordable by basing the program on an annual funding basis knowing the annual availability of resources, knowing the budget deficit on an annual basis. So from a point of view of assessing vulnerability, this strategy is preferred to any other strategy. And I think if something happens in the future where technology is may come about or not, I think we've laid out a strategy which is called spiral development. Spiral development is a way to acquire systems in which the first increment of the spiral is you're more confident in being able to deliver that first increment on schedule, within cost, and with a certain performance. And then you allow that increment to be upgraded to the next increment and next spiral. That's a much preferred approach and much less risky than saying, I'm going to go for the full capability on the first development cycle. It takes you a little longer, perhaps, because of the spirals. But then again, you probably are much more confident of being able to deliver on the schedule, on the cost, with the performance that you've specified. And therefore, the program approach, I believe, is going to give you a less risky approach to the system developed that would otherwise be available.
Neil Tyson was not a newcomer to commission work. In 2001, he had served on the Commission on the Future of the United States Aerospace Industry. He was able to deftly return this volley.
I'd like to add, you know, in mathematics, there's something called an existence proof, where to try to prove that something exists, if you have an example of it right in front of you, well, that is sometimes good enough. In the 1960s, between 1960 and 1969, those 10 years of NASA funding, that funding rate in that decade is the same in constant dollars as the funding proposed to go forward. And in that decade, we built NASA and went to the moon. And that is an important existence proof for what is possible with these monies. What we do know is that the way NASA is currently configured, it is not streamlined to execute the vision as laid out. It's really leftover legacy structures for having gone to the moon. So no one is saying we can execute this vision the way NASA is currently configured. It needs to be reconfigured, not simply, as noted earlier by Carly, it's not simply an improvement of efficiency, it's a complete redistribution of its profile so that the money that it is getting can achieve the vision as laid out, just as the streamlined NASA of the Apollo era got us to the moon. And so that's an important existence proof that I personally take going forward as a measure of confidence that the vision will succeed.
Again, Bob Walker's 20-year congressional experience came to the rescue.
Pete, if I might.
Yes.
This is Bob Walker. I mean, it's a reasonable assumption that NASA is going to continue to spend for the next several years the amount of money that they're presently spending. I mean, that's a fairly reasonable assumption based upon past history and looking forward in congressional appropriation cycle. That being the case, the only issue before the Congress then is you're going to spend the money anyway. Are you going to spend it in a focused way, or are you going to continue to spend it in an unfocused way? That's the real question that Congress will have to address. It's not a question of the money. The money is the same. The issue here is whether or not you're going to spend it better or continue to spend it in ways that don't accomplish the goals that NASA would like to achieve.
Thank you. Before we return here to the front row, is there anyone else on the phone bridge?
Susan, this is Todd Halverson of Florida Today.
Hi, Todd. Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you. Mark Garneau and the gentleman from Germany both expressed concerns about U.S. support to the International Space Station beyond the shuttle's retirement. And they also alluded to the fact that NASA, in a way, has reneged on its obligation to provide a crew rescue vehicle to the station, the U.S. HAB module, and ultimately the crew size, or consequently the crew size, has remained at three or even two now. I'm wondering if the commission is going to make recommendations in regard to how much support the United States should be providing to the International Space Station post-assembly complete, and whether you have any recommendations on meeting U.S. obligations that might be made as part of the Moon-Mars initiative.
Commission Chairman was Secretary of the Air Force under President Reagan and responded to the next question.
Well, I think my view is the President was very clear on the U.S. policy with regard to the International Space Station. We are going to meet our obligations to the space station. It may mean that the out year, the specifics of how we're going to support the space station from a U.S. point of view may change to be more focused on the vision that has been created. But I don't think there is any intent, I don't read, and maybe the other commissioners can comment on this, to back away from the International Space Station until we have achieved the objectives we set out for the space station some 10 or years or more, maybe even longer into the future. So I think we are committed to space station support and that we're gonna follow through for that support. And we certainly are going to ask for participation from our partners on the Moon to Mars initiative that the President's laid out. Any comments from anybody else?
All right, we'll finish up here with Frank Mooring, Aviation Week.
Thank you. Forgive me if this question has been asked, but can you give us an idea of the level of detail that the report is going to present? You mentioned earlier there are 10 strategies or 10 options. Is this going to be, this is how NASA should be reorganized, for example? How do you see the report taking its final form? How specific is it going to be?
Again, Moon Mars Chairman Pete Aldridge took this final question.
Well, in 120 days, you can't get too specific. We haven't written it yet, so it's kind of hard for us to say, you know, well, it's going to be 67 pages and cover the following things. But we clearly set out the goal for this commission was to not go into a lot of detail, hundreds of recommendations that to carry out this vision for the President. It was going to be focused on, we use the term top 10. It may end up to be 12, it may end up to be 8 when the final report's written, but it's in the order of what are the 10 major things that the President must do to implement this vision for success. It doesn't mean going in and designing the heavy lift vehicle for NASA. It doesn't mean designing the crew exploration vehicle. It doesn't mean here are the next 8 robotic missions you should fly. That is a NASA job. Our job was to tell the President what he needed to do to implement this vision. And that, therefore, focuses more on the management and structure and culture needed to carry out this vision, not how to do it. We're not telling the President, here's the recipe for baking this cake. But here are the things you must do if you are to achieve this vision in a successful way. And I'll put it in the terms of two terms. One is the goal that's been set out is a really ambitious goal. Complete the space station, phase out the shuttle, go back, do robotics to the moon and Mars, go back human exploration of the moon and then back to Mars. That's kind of where we're trying to go. But equally important is the journey to get there. The things we are doing and the technologies we're developing along the way to make that goal achievable. Both of those are equally important. It's the technology spinoffs that we heard so much about. It's the inspiration that comes from this vision to stimulate science, math, and engineering education. It's the industrial competitiveness that comes about. It's the productivity that comes about of this technology, the challenges of technology, and all of it results in the prosperity and a quality of life for Americans is going to be along the journey. It's the jobs that are created as a result, and the jobs that are created because of the spinoffs of these technologies. So all of that is important, but we're trying to tell the president, okay, here are the things you've got to do to make all that happen. And it does deal mostly with the organization and the culture and what role do international participants play and what role does the private sector play. And in those areas, we will be specific in making recommendations.
And that's how the final press conference on the final day of the final public hearing of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission ended. The proceedings were compared by Susan Flowers, who was the Commission's Public Affairs Officer. This has been Program 80 in our space show series of Moon Mars Specials. It was written and edited by Andrew Rennie, using audio digitally transferred to Southern FM by Alan Walker. In our next two programs, the nine commissioners will sum up their impressions of the evidence presented to them during the hearings.